You care about helping others learn and grow, and now you can make an even greater difference. The Ohio State University's fully online master's in applied behavior analysis prepares you to help learners with disabilities thrive. You'll develop the skills to use evidence-based interventions that enhance learning outcomes and foster independence, all in a flexible format designed for working professionals. With growing demand for board-certified behavior analysts, this online program helps you prepare for what's next without pausing your life. If you're ready to expand your impact, Ohio State is ready to support your next step. Visit go.osu.edu/behavioranalysis.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Welcome to a special edition of the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm John Hodge, joined by JC the Cheese Abbott. Today, we are going to be breaking down the upcoming CFL Combine, previewing it, giving our takes, our analysis, who to watch. I don't want to say who to ignore, but we'll get to that a little bit later on. JC and I are going to be on site in Edmonton for all the action next week. I know I'm excited. How are you feeling, JC?
I'm fired up. You know, draft season is my favorite time of the year. Forget about actually playing football. Who wants to do that? I want to evaluate prospects and watch them run around in shirts and shorts. That's the good stuff, right? Everyone gets fired up about. No, it's a special time of year for me, and I'm actually, maybe for once in my life, ahead of the curve here on my prep. I'm feeling pretty good heading into this draft, so the combine will be an exciting time.
That's awesome, and I got to look at the weather. It looks like it's going to be about -5 the whole time we're there, so I'm going to be walking around in a t-shirt and shorts, and you are going to be dying of hypothermia, like at the end of Titanic.
Full parka.
It's going to be hilarious. Yes, full parka, full garb. It's going to be great. And if you're in Edmonton for Combine, I've already got some messages from people saying, hey, are you doing a meetup of any kind? We're not doing a meetup. We don't have anything planned. But like, we are going to be at the field house, and all this information is publicly available. So if you're someone who's a listener to the pod, if you are the pod, you want to meet the Cheese and or myself, obviously just show up, right? I'm not saying like, don't like show up to things that aren't public, but for the parts of the combine that are public, feel free to come on down. If you see us, wave us over. We're more than happy to say hi and thank you in person for all your support. So without further ado, let's break it down, JC. We're going to go position by position. We're going to start with the quarterbacks, obviously. And thank goodness Justin Dunk's not here, so the segment doesn't take 24 hours. We have two top quarterbacks who are at this year's Combine. I'll ask you to introduce them, JC. And as we will for all of these positional groups, give us a take as to whether it's one of the stronger groups in the draft or maybe one of the weaker groups.
Yeah, three quarterbacks overall at the Combine, two that really matter, with all due respect to Josh Jansen from the Ottawa GGs. Those two would be Christian Veilleux, currently of Georgia State, and Eloa L'Entendresse Regimbold from McGill. Now, this is not a great QB draft. And we were a little bit spoiled last year, Hodge, because the first time in a long time, we got to talk about not just one quarterback who was a CFL prospect, but multiple quarterbacks who were CFL prospects, as we had Curtis Rourke and Taylor Elgersma and Jonathan Senecal, who all got drafted, and then guys like Arnaud Desjardins, who were on the fringes as well. That's not really this class. Now, Veilleux was a top recruit who has played for some big-time programs, right? He attended Penn State. He started games there. He transferred to Pittsburgh, started games there, and then, of course, finished up his career at Georgia State. But it's been mostly a downward trajectory for him. He's got the frame that you want to see, 6'4", 220-ish quarterback. He's got decent arm strength, but he hasn't been able to put it together on the field. And the question for CFL teams is going to be whether they want to take a flyer on a guy who couldn't consistently establish himself as a starter at a variety of levels of college football, and certainly at the group of five level. That's typically not somebody that they've taken a long look at, but he certainly got the size that he could contribute in short yardage. On the other hand, L'Entendresse Regibol, to me, is one of the more fascinating prospects in this draft, and it's going to come down, in my opinion, to what he wants to do in terms of whether he has a CFL career, because quite frankly, as a quarterback, he's not consistent enough as a decision maker or with his accuracy to play at the next level. He just doesn't have those tools right now. He has been hot and he has been cold. But he is an elite athlete. We're talking about maybe not Trey Ford levels of speed, but certainly a very elusive quarterback, maybe more akin to a Brad Sinopoli, if you want to go back in the throwback bag in terms of his elusiveness and ability to get down the field, but much bigger size than a guy like Trey Ford. He's listed at 6'4", 196 pounds. That's intriguing measurables. And we saw Jackson Chachinski come into the combine last year, try and make the conversion from athletic quarterback to receiver. I think L'Entendresse Regibol would be a much better fit for that type of role. The question that has not been answered yet is whether he would be open to that transition at the pro level, or whether he will try any receiver drills at all at the combine. That is something that we're going to ask him on day one when we get there and figure out what the future holds for this very intriguing athletic QB from the Redbirds.
I am really interested to see what comes of Christian Veilleux. Like, this is a guy who committed to Penn State coming out of high school. He finished his high school in Maryland, so he was in the United States for that recruiting process. He goes to Penn State, sees action as a true freshman in 2021, only throws 26 pass attempts, so he did get a red shirt, but he's still, as a true freshman, at one of the top programs in all of collegiate football, got on the field as a quarterback and was productive. Three touchdowns, no picks. Everyone's going, wow, this guy could be a future piece in this program, a potential future franchise guy. That obviously didn't come to pass. He only attempted 9 passes in 2022, and then he transferred to the University of Pittsburgh, which is not a massive step down, but it's a pretty significant step down. There he completes 51% of his passes. That's some of the inaccuracy JC's talking about, for just shy of 1,200 yards, 7 touchdowns, 8 picks. Not a great ratio. He transfers down again to Georgia State, which is one of the worst programs in the FBS. It's still a legitimate FBS program, but again, it's a step down. And over 2 seasons with that school, he started 10 games, went 3-7 as a starter, and his touchdown interception ratio was 16-14. So again, this time it's above, you know, the above even, but still not great. In total, he finished across all 5 years, his collegiate career, completing 54.4% of his passes, 4,000 yards, 26 touchdowns, 22 interceptions. He does have some athleticism, but he's not like a true dual threat guy. Finished his collegiate career with only 1 rushing touchdown, 148 rushing yards. But That said, I from talking to people who have spoken to the Christian, I've not yet done that. I'm going to do it at Combine, hopefully for a podcast episode, so stay tuned to that. But he seems to be a smart guy, a high character guy. Obviously, his collegiate career just didn't follow the trajectory you'd like. Optimally, it would be the reverse, right? You would see a guy transferring up and up to higher programs, right? Programs with better reputations, more competitive programs. He did the opposite. So I personally think that Villa deserves a shot at a CFL training camp. I really do. We'll see if he's athletic enough to like Latondres Reginbald, and I'm not going to do the gratuitous French accent like JC. Sorry, dude. To warrant maybe a position change, but I remember 5 years ago, people talking about Vaillu, it's like, I'm not even sure our league is going to get a shot at this guy, mm-hmm. right? He could be all NFL. And now it's like, he's kind of a periphery CFL guy. So there's a reason, right, why he was once a highly sought-after recruit. There's a reason why he played as a true freshman at Penn State. We'll have to wait and see if that is evident in a CFL training camp, if he can get some of that back. Personally, JC, I do not see a future Nathan Rourke in this group, a future, you know, star CFL quarterback. But I do think that these are two, and including Jansen, a guy who's 6'6", 215, there are some intriguing players here who could potentially surprise us, right? We don't know anything for a fact when it comes to scouting, and scouts don't either, right? Like, Trey Lance was the third overall pick in the NFL draft. Obviously, that was an error. And almost every team in the NFL passed on Aaron Donald. Every team passed multiple times on Max Crosby, right? In the NFL, they're always doing a best guess. The CFL is no different. And we're obviously doing that as members of the media. We're just projecting. We're just taking the temperature of the room, using our own eyes for this analysis. So nothing is for sure. Anybody can surprise you positively, can surprise you negatively. But right now, I would agree that there's not a future starter in this group. But I have been at combines before where it's like, yeah, the quarterbacks are irrelevant. Don't even pay attention to them. That is not this year. Here, we're somewhere in the middle where it's like, okay, there's something to these guys. But yeah, we're probably not looking at any future CFL stars at the quarterback position.
And I will say this before we move on, and this is projecting a little bit to a conversation we'd have in a few minutes. But if we want to talk about who is the quarterback in this class who probably has the chance to get drafted the highest, I know we talked about this on the podcast last week. I forgot to mention the guy who almost certainly will go first of this group, and that's Jerome Rancourt from Western, who is not listed as a quarterback at the combine, despite the fact that he may return to school and be QB1 for the Mustangs in the OUA next season. But he is a massive body fullback tight end who's going to be one of the key players at that position to watch. To me, he's a better CFL prospect than any of the other guys who have thrown passes.
I would agree with that. I also understand Rancourt is going back to school for 2026. So that hurts his draft stock, right? Like last year, for context, Seth Hundeby, star linebacker to the University of Saskatchewan, big body guy who tested super well. I think he's at worst a second round pick if he's available right away. Mm-hmm. He made it clear to teams, I'm going back to school. He ended up going in the fourth round to the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. So I think that's a decent barometer. Obviously, every draft is different. Every player is different. But when a guy is going back to school, or let's say they're projected to spend a year in the NFL, then their draft stock tends to go down in and around 20 picks, about two rounds. But again, every year is different. Every draft is different. Teams have different priorities every year. So it's hard to write anything in stone. Let's skip ahead, JC, to that fullback group. We'll come back to the running backs in just a second, but we'll start with the fullbacks. Rohan Jones, tight end out of Arkansas, will not be at the combine. He did his own pro day, tested well. Some CFL scouts think he's going to be a priority undrafted free agent in the NFL. Some I've spoken to think he's actually going to be a late round pick in the NFL. So the top kind of now guys, if we can use that term, in other words, players who are going to be available to CFL teams in 2026, would include Emmerich Boutin out of Laval. And I think you're throwing Dante Daniels out of North Carolina State into that class as well, though he will not be at the combine. Rancourt will be at the combine, but as mentioned, is a 2027 guy, not a 2026 guy. So how do you feel, JC, about this fullback group?
I love the fullback tight end group. I think there's some exceptional talents here. Now, where they'll fit on CFL rosters is a little bit different. Rohan Jones, as you mentioned, true weapon. He may get serious NFL looks. Dante Daniels, I think, is big enough that some teams may explore moving him to offensive tackle, as he's been primarily a blocker there for NC State. But if you look at the four guys who are attending the combine, there's a lot to like about them. Rancourt is a huge body. To me, he's a better version of Quincy Vaughn from a year ago in terms of somebody who can play fullback, tight end, is a little bit more polished there at that stage, in my opinion, but is also going to be an elite short yardage quarterback option for you. I think he's got some real wheels to take it along the edge. He'll be intriguing to teams that are willing to wait a year. The star of the show, though, here, Emmerich Boutin. This guy is a unique athlete in terms of a tight end coming out of U Sports. Not super big, 6'3", 230. That's why you're not necessarily hearing, you know, NFL buzz about him like you did about his mentor, Anthony Auclair. But somebody who has the wheels to be a real receiving threat, maybe in the sort of Patrick Lavoie type of mold that we've seen in the past, a true H-back who can be flexed out wide into the slot and threaten defenses with unique looks.
And I know the fullback position isn't the sexiest position, but when you talk to CFL personnel people, a lot of them will say, look, like obviously quarterback's the most important position, but a lot of teams in the CFL, you know, their top 20 might be just as good as another team's top 20. Where they win a lot of games is the guys that fill out the bottom 10 spots on the roster. Guys in like spots 36 through 46 or 35 mm-hmm. through 45. Those are the guys who make all the difference. And oftentimes fullbacks fit into that. Fullbacks play a ton of special teams, which are very important in the Canadian Football League. They do a ton of blocking. Like, again, they're not guys you necessarily notice. There have been some fullbacks who have become, maybe household names would be overstating it, but popular among fans. Declan Cross, for instance, had some great years with the Toronto Argonauts. You mentioned one, JC, and former, primarily played with the Ottawa Redblacks, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So, whether it's, I mean, David Dallaire, I think, is starting to do some exciting things with the Montreal Alouettes, who's a current fullback, but fullbacks do matter and they do make a difference. And I think you're going to see a lot of fullbacks come off the board relatively early in this draft because there have not been a lot of those body types or those kind of more polished players in past years. So if there's a spot that's strong, and I agree with JC, it's a stronger group that's going to go early. You know, if you're a CFL fan, you know, maybe pause before you're like, why the heck are we taking a fullback in round two? Like, someone who I think was poised to be the next great CFL fullback tight end was Nikola Kalinic, who was the 10th overall pick to the Tiger Cats in 2019, had a great rookie season, played well in 2021, and has since parlayed that into like a five-year NFL career down south. So I don't think anybody would say Kalinic was overdrafted. He just didn't end up playing in the CFL for super long because he made a career down south. Now, let's go to the running backs group, a group that's not as strong. It seems as though your top running back, JC, is Isaiah Smith out of Guelph. Why is he your number one guy?
Size, primarily. This guy has just a massive lower body, and he contributed a ton as a receiver last year as well, showing that skill set, although it was primarily on screens and outlet passes. I think when you look at this running back group, it's a shallow class, just four guys here at the National Combine, and they all have flaws. Like Smith and Wiagbe Mambo out of Windsor are both large guys. Teams will like to see that, but they don't necessarily play like the physical players that you would expect from somebody of that size at the U Sports level. They try to bounce things outside. They're a little bit high into contact. They're not running people over and physically dominating as much as you like. And that's a big reason why both of them at various points in their careers have been more of tandem backfield options instead of primary workhorses. I think the best running back overall in terms of his actual rushing production and skill set is Charles Astolainte from the University of Ottawa. This is a guy who's got some real wiggle to make you miss when he's coming downhill. But 5'11", 200 listed, he probably comes in a little bit lighter than that, a little bit smaller than that. That is a tough sell if you don't have a ton of special teams production, which he's done a lot of work as a returner, but not necessarily covering kicks. So it'll be interesting to see if he gets drafted at all with that size and skill set. It means it's wide open for somebody to establish themselves as RB1 in this class, in my opinion, right now. And even a guy like Liam Talbot, who was the backup to Mambo at Windsor, but got drawn up from the Invitational Combine, with the skill set that he showed and the fact that he's produced a little bit more on special teams, has a chance to really elevate himself in Edmonton.
Yeah, the running back group at the CFL Combine, really in any CFL draft, it's really tough to go round one. Like Brady Oliveira, who is an MOP, multiple-time MOC, and multiple-time rushing champion, went 14th overall, right, in his draft. He is somebody who every team in the CFL passed on, including the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, twice. The Bombers had two first-round picks that year, and they went, no, we're going O-line and D-line with our top two picks. We'll get the running back at 14. And I think that exemplifies, even when you do have like a potential future ratio-breaking running back, how this position's generally not valued. That said, JC, I agree with your take. I don't think there's a future starter here. That said, we have seen just this past offseason two like really rock-solid Canadian running backs retire in Jeshrun Antwi, who finished his career at the Calgary Stampeders, and Sean Thomas Erlington, who actually started games for the Montreal Alouettes in 2005. So I do think that there's some hunger here, some appetite for teams to up that position. And when you mentioned like guys like Smith, guys like Mambo, who have a little more size, it's like, okay, if you're a true 6'1", 220, you can now compete on special teams. So I know special teams isn't the sexiest spot, right? It's a bit of a theme with the CFL draft. You know, running backs tend to get judged based on how well they run the ball. And look, when you're running back, you got to catch the ball out of the backfield. You got to protect the passer. But if you're big enough that you can compete on teams, right? Jeshrun Antwi made a career of that, winning multiple Grey Cups, doing so with various clubs, or at least one Grey Cup, JC. Did he win two Grey Cups? Head of my mind, he won two Grey Cups. I think that's wrong. Regardless, running around on teams is super important. So that's what I'm watching for with this group. Yes, I'll be watching this group at the Combine when they're doing one-on-ones and full skelly stuff, but I'm mostly going to be watching them when they're on teams because that can make all the difference. The receiver class, JC, we're in agreement, is not a terribly strong group. Don't worry, we are going to get to some strong groups. I know we haven't said any of these groups are strong yet. There are two top receivers, or at least I think consensus top receivers, it's fair to say, who will not be at the Combine. Those are Nick Senecal out of Hawaii and Nolan Ulm out of Eastern Washington. With that said, there are some intriguing options at the Combine. It seems like your top one is Nate Demoniak out of North Dakota. Why is he your top receiver at the Combine?
Well, he's a guy who's trending up in the right direction in terms of his college career. There's a number of guys coming out of FCS level programs. That's the football championship subdivision. Division One AA is what they used to call it. So a level below the FBS that you're probably used to watching on television when you tune into NCAA football, but still high level competition that have been reasonably productive throughout their college careers, but have never really blown anybody's socks off. Demoniak is the guy who was the most productive last year and has been trending in the right direction. 6'3", 195 pounds. That's good size for a guy who plays in the slot. I think he can elevate himself with a strong combine performance. Dylan Jette out of Alabama State, sort of similar level of production, but has had a hot and cold career, was really good as a freshman for Wofford College, also at the FCS level, and you know, seemed like he would have big things in front of him, then tailed off, and then finally recaptured that glory with Alabama State. The production there is similar, but he's a lot smaller, listed at 6 foot, 185, looks really slight. That'll be something that teams are going to be looking at the combine. Can he hold up physically? Does he have the compensating athletic traits to succeed? And then there's also guys like Malik Mega, who we saw test at the Coastal Carolina Pro Day earlier this week and absolutely go off the charts, running a 4-yard dash that, depending on who you believe, was anywhere from a 4.36 to a 4.43. Those are great numbers regardless for his size, which is in the 6'3", 205 range. He's cut up. He's got burning speed, but he's never done anything in his college career. He was with Christian Veilleux at Penn State, caught his first touchdown pass from Veilleux as a freshman, and never established himself as a starter. Even this year, which was his best career year for the Chanticleers, he had just 19 catches for 206 yards and a single touchdown. You'd think a guy with those measurables would be able to produce more at that level of competition than he's been able to. Scouts are going to have a lot of questions, and it's up in the air whether Mega is actually going to take to the field on the CFL combine. It should be noted that a lot of these NCAA guys with pro days may test, may not test, may take part in practices, may opt out of certain practices. It's unclear what their participation level will be. We'll know more about that over the coming week. But he could have a chance to really elevate himself or hurt himself if he just looks like another guy once he gets the pads on against some of these U Sports DBs.
And maybe we should talk about that a little bit, JC. In past years at a combine, in this year there's 82 players scheduled to be in attendance. In previous years, of those 82, there might only be 5 who come from the NCAA. All the others, essentially, coming from the U Sports ranks in Canada. Why is it that so many guys, a way higher percentage, are coming from the NCAA this year?
Well, it's twofold. On one hand, there's just more guys in the NCAA. We've seen those numbers tick up over the last number of years for a combination of reasons, because more Canadian high schoolers are finishing their careers at U.S. prep schools and therefore getting more attention because it's easier to see film across the border and teams are more willing to scout Canadian prospects because the level of training at the amateur level in Canada has gotten better. All of that has contributed to an influx of Canadian talent in the NCAA. But the bigger reason why it's the case this year is traditionally, for many, many years at the CFL Combine, the league has taken a hard line stance that if you are coming to the Combine, you have to be a full participant, with, you know, some exceptions. If there was a specific injury, you could opt out of the bench press or whatever you needed to do there. But you had to test and you had to participate in the drills and the practices. Otherwise, and they did this on a number of occasions, they would send you home. So if you're an NCAA guy who's going to have a chance to perform at his pro day in front of NFL scouts and really expose yourself in that way, do those drills in a controlled environment, it made a lot more sense for you to go that route and to only test at your pro day. Well, last year, the precedent was set with some of these top guys like Devin Verisuk, who participated in a pro day and then opted not to test at the CFL Combine or not participate in certain elements, that the league will now allow you to come and interview and take part in the Combine without doing everything. And so these NCAA guys are now committing to come to the Combine when they also have a pro day. And some of them are going to stand on those pro day numbers, and others of them are going to opt not to risk their health and their status, particularly those who are at the top of the draft class already, by taking part in practices. We know a few of those names off the record. Others of those are being sort of hammered out as we speak, but there's going to be sort of a full list of guys who are opting out of whatever portion of the combine it may be coming out over the next week before we actually hit to the field. But there will be a not insignificant number of guys who are not going to be full participants in Edmonton.
And this has been a little bit of a gray area in past years. Like, I remember the last time the CFL Combine was in Edmonton in 2023, Lawal Uguac was there to interview with teams, but he did not participate in on-field events as someone who was doing a pro day down in the NCAA. So it's not like brand new, but it does seem like we have now reached a conclusion where, yes, if you want to come and just do select things, you are permitted to do that. I think it's probably good that we have this clarity for everybody, because obviously if you're a guy who, let's say you have a pro day 2 weeks before combine and you run an unbelievably good 40-yard dash, yeah, you don't want to come to the combine and risk running a slower time and hurting your stock. Conversely, if you run a terrible time at your pro day, you might go, oh, thank goodness I'm going to combine. I can improve on my time there. So you can see how, depending on how pro days go, depending on the type of numbers guys are open to put up, they would be more or less likely to want to be in the combine. And sometimes these pro days only happen 72 hours or less even before combine starts. So sometimes it's very last minute, like, oh, we got a great time. Okay, we're not going to compete in the 40-yard dash at combine. Well, now we're not going to combine, right? So like sometimes in past years, I feel like you'd get to combine and then learn, oh, so-and-so is not coming after all. I think it's good to just say, yeah, come no matter what. If you want to run, please run. If you don't want to run, you don't have to. I think this is all good. I think it's all smart. For me, I'm really excited to see the two top U Sports guys, Carter Kettle out of Alberta, Shamar McBean out of UBC. Part of that is I'm probably a little biased towards guys I've seen in person, and I've seen Kettle and McBean both play in person. But the other reason I'm excited to see them, JC, is they're the two top producers in this draft class, right? Yes, it's U Sports, it's not NCAA, but if you look across the CFL, whether it's Keandre Smith, Nick Dembski, Tyson Philpott, Jalen Philpott, a lot of the top Canadian receivers in this league come from the U Sports ranks. In the last few years, yes, you've seen Justin McInnes do some outstanding things. He was an NCAA guy. You've seen Samuel Emelis do some outstanding things. He was an NCAA guy. But a lot of the top players who are Canadian receivers in this league come from U Sports. And if, you know, Carter Kettle, a guy who's put up almost 2,000 yards at Alberta, was a Canada West All-Star this year, can be that guy, I'm excited to see it. If Shamar McBean can be that guy, a guy who put up almost 2,500 yards with the Thunderbirds, was also a Canada West All-Star this year, I'm excited to see that, right? Guys like Malik Mega, you mentioned, really nice testing numbers, really great frame. Mega only made 35 catches across 51 NCAA games. I'm not saying he can't be a good receiver. Kian Schaefer-Baker, for instance, yeah, was a U Sports guy, but an example of somebody who didn't have a ton of production at the collegiate level and then exploded in the CFL, right? If there is some precedent for that. And obviously guys who are big and test well have special teams value, whereas, you know, your more kind of standard, smaller bodied receivers maybe don't have that special teams value, which is always something teams are looking for at the professional level. That said, I do think it's very noteworthy that the two top producers, the two most productive receivers in this class, are from the U Sports ranks. And again, when you look at the kind of the landscape of the Canadian Football League, generally speaking, most of the top Canadian receivers went through the U Sports ranks, not the NCAA ranks. Does that mean that McBean and Kettle are going to pop off and everyone else is going to bust? No, of course not. But I do think at this point in the evaluation, it's noteworthy. And JC, you got a chance to see McBean at UBC's recent pro day, and he ran really well. So I do think that bodes well for his stock going into this event.
I've seen both of these guys live, obviously McBean at his pro day and watching UBC games. He's a legit burner. Not the biggest guy in the world, and he's 5'10 and a half, but has enough size and has the speed to excel in the CFL game. Carter Kettle was somebody who I was super impressed by when I was down with the College Gridiron Showcase in Texas. And Malik Mega was down there too, when you bring up the comparison between the two. And Mega was pretty much invisible throughout that week. Carter Kettle flashed multiple times and you'll love this, Hodge, as a music guy, bears a striking resemblance to a young Eminem. Like, when he takes his helmet off, it's uncanny, the young Slim Shaggy from the University of Alberta. But these are legitimate guys, and I think that's the benefit of the CFL Combine, is when you get those productive U Sports players on the same field as these guys who participated at lower level NCAA schools, and you get that apples to apples moment of here they are running routes one after another against the same guys participating in the same drills, and you see that sometimes that NCAA is not all it's cracked up to be, right? They have fewer question marks in my mind right now than I do with the NCAA guys. That's why I'm so locked in and focused on them, but they could very easily get drafted higher than any of those players that we mentioned and creep up into that top tier of receivers right under Nick Senecal, who is, I think, the consensus top guy in this class out of Hawaii. I think really it's anybody's game right now for receiver two, and it's going to depend on your scheme and your preference. They all have a shot at that role. Another player that I'll mention just quickly, who I think has a chance to elevate himself, particularly in my mind, is Devin Blackwood out of St. Francis Xavier. Was not healthy enough to be able to test at the East-West Bowl last year, so we don't really have the athletic measurables on him that we do on some of these other players, but he looks like a guy who could impress with some of those testing numbers. He's been productive, 6'3", 202, looks athletic, has the size, has some of the twitch you want to see. He's somebody that I've got my eye on as a potential riser as more people get a chance to see him in person, knowing that not everybody's had the chance to get out to Antigonish and watch a game over the last few years.
Well, and for those who don't pay attention to a lot of U Sports or watch a lot of U Sports, there's four conferences across the country. The Atlantic Conference, you know, if you go back 20 years ago, was super competitive right there with everybody else. That has not been the case the last little bit. And last year, for what I believe is the first time ever, there were zero players taken out of any of the four Atlantic University programs. Obviously, Blackwood and a few other guys in this draft are hoping to change that this year and get back to that Atlantic Conference producing top players. And by the way, just that one program, St. FX, I mean, Enoch Mwamba played at St. FX. I know that's 15 years ago, but he was a first overall pick out of St. FX. And Keon Julian Grant, who's been a very solid receiver in this league for many years now, came out of St. FX in 2019. So, like, this program has produced really legitimate Canadian starters in the relatively recent past, but the conference has again not been as competitive in the last few years. So I'm curious to see if we do get AUS draft picks this year, and if so, how many? Because last year was dubious getting a big zero, big donut. Let's go to the offensive line group, JC. And offensive linemen generally dominate the CFL draft, or at least the top of the CFL draft. And this is a position I think we're both high on, right? The last few years, we haven't had great offensive line draft classes. We've had a couple of really good receiver draft classes. 2022, I think, is going to go down being arguably the best receiver class of all time in the CFL draft, for instance. But offensive line, maybe lesser so. Why is this group so strong?
I think there's just a depth of talent that we haven't seen in a number of years. And that starts with the NCAA guys. There's a ton with legitimate starting experience for big time schools. Obviously, a couple who won't be at the combine are Logan Taylor, who was at the NFL combine, and then Albert Reese, who's the starting tackle at Mississippi State. Those are intriguing guys with NFL levels of interest. But there's a number of players who you had mocked in the first round and in contention for first overall that will be at the combine, whether they're testing or not, remains up in the air. But somebody like Darius Bell out of East Carolina is maybe I am less high on than some other people who are watching him, but has started at four different positions, has the size that you look for and a Division I pedigree. You've got Giordano Vaccaro, who was the J.P. Metris Trophy winner at Manitoba, a dominant U Sports lineman, transferred to Purdue, didn't play much last year, but is certainly going to be in the conversation for first overall. And guys like Jonathan Denis, who was a four-star recruit, one of the top offensive linemen in the United States, coming out of high school, went to Oregon, didn't pan out there, transferred to Miami, had a couple starts at center, and then actually had to go down a level of competition to Central Missouri because of frequent knee injuries, reinvigorated his career there, and had an excellent campaign at guard for Louisiana Tech last year, who can be difference makers, I think, as plug-and-play starting offensive linemen. And then the U Sports class is crazy deep as well. Nicholas Henning is going to test off the charts as the offensive tackle at Queens. If we want to make a prediction right now for who is going to be the big winner on testing day, well, he's not going to win the events because he is an offensive lineman overall. But when you go pound for pound based on weight, like, this guy's going to run crazy fast. He's going to jump far. He is a special athlete, was an All-Canadian as an H-back just a few years ago before converting to offensive tackle, and he still moves like it. But there are other U Sports guys who are just buttery smooth in space as well. Unfortunately, we won't get a chance to see Spencer Walsh, who I love a ton because he's recovering from injury. But there's a number of players who maybe don't have the size in certain circumstances, like a Mitchell Scheschinger, who's a little bit smaller, or a Braden Seisman out of Calgary, but very effective, strong players. Jack Warrack, who was a freshman starter at the University of Saskatchewan, which almost never happens, and has a storied U Sports career. There is talent up and down the board in this draft class for offensive linemen, and it could not come at a better time when CFL teams are desperate for an infusion up front.
You care about helping others learn and grow, and now you can make an even greater difference. The Ohio State University's fully online master's in applied behavior analysis prepares you to help learners with disabilities thrive. You'll develop the skills to use evidence-based interventions that enhance learning outcomes and foster independence, all in a flexible format designed for working professionals. With growing demand for board-certified behavior analysts, this online program helps you prepare for what's next without pausing your life. If you're ready to expand your impact, Ohio State is ready to support your next step. Visit go.osu.edu/behavioranalysis.
Well said, JC. And for the record, we said on the last week's show it was Giordano Vassaro. You just said Vaccaro. I heard it from the man himself. It is Vaccaro. So
Vaccaro. There we go.
Apologies for literally being wrong twice. I'm also 99% sure that Jonathan Denis says Dennis. He was born in Montreal, but he has lived most of his life in the United States. But yes, this is a strong group. And CFL teams who I've talked to could not be happier with this, because offensive line, as we've seen, right? Like, we just saw it in free agency, $300,000 for Coulter Woodmansee. Like, it's not that long ago that $200,000 was the ceiling for offensive linemen that made you go like, whoa, this guy's making 200 G's. Well, the market has been reset, right? 300 for him. We've seen other guys, Logan Ferland being one of them in Saskatchewan, a center guard there, Pierre-Olivier Lestage at guard with the Montreal Alouettes. Like, the prices are entering, like, they were already entering kind of the upper 200s. They are now officially in the 300s. And so if you're a CFL team going, okay, we think this guy can come in and start as a rookie, right, which was the case last year with Christopher Fortin coming in for the Calgary Stampeders and starting at center. Or even if you have to wait a year, right, he can be our sixth offensive lineman this year and then start in year two. When you have a guy who's playing at a high level on a rookie contract, that makes all the difference in the world. It's almost like, not exactly like, but it's almost like in the NFL where you have a quarterback on a rookie contract, right? If a quarterback in the NFL proves they're worth anything, suddenly they make $40 or $50 or $60 billion a year. Whereas coming out of college, they might be making $3 million. And it's like, wow, okay, we've got an extra $30, $40, $50 million to play with at other positions. Now we can make a Super Bowl run. So the offensive line, I think, is a bit similar. The challenge for teams is there just hasn't been the depth, right? There hasn't been the talent to load up on offensive linemen in years past. This year, I think there is. So this is a very strong group. There's a reason that I mocked four offensive linemen going in the first round. And that's even with, as JC pointed out, the two NFL futures here in Logan Taylor and Albert Rees IV starting their careers in the NFL. Could they both eventually come up to Canada? Sure. Who knows what the future holds. But I think Vaccaro is a first-round pick for sure. I think Bell is a first-round pick. I think Henning is a first-round pick. And I think Dennis is also a first-round pick. And who knows? We'll have to wait and see who else pops off the page at Combine. One name I will throw out there, JC, is Franklin Ebello out of Calgary. And the reason I mention him is because at my first combine ever, I'm pretty sure it was, there was a 6'7", 300-pound defensive tackle named Mathieu Breton out of Bishops. And I remember speaking with Breton because everybody, the buzz was like, well, he plays D tackle, but you know, he should really be playing offensive tackle. He should really be converted to the offensive line. And so I remember speaking with Breton and I basically said, hey, how many teams have you interviewed with? And if I remember correctly, he was like, all of them. And I said, and how many of them have asked you about switching to the offensive line? And his face kind of fell and he was like, all of them. Because it was clear he did not want to play offensive line. He loved playing defensive line. That said, I think Franklin Ebello could be another project like that. He's about the same size, 6'7", 300 pounds, out of the University of Calgary. He's exclusively played D-line as far as I'm aware, but
started out as an O-line.
Pardon?
He started out as an O-line early in his career at Calgary.
Okay. He converted to D-line. I wouldn't be at all surprised, given the measurables, if he is converted back to the offensive line then. I've not had the chance to see him in person. Combine will be my first chance to do so. But there's obviously just not that many guys who are athletic who are that size. And if you have that combination, teams will move you there. That same year that at Combine, there was defensive lineman Kay Okafor out of the AUS. Do you remember what school he came out of?
St. FX.
Yeah, it was St. FX. He moved to the offensive line, developed for a couple of years, and ended up starting games at offensive tackle for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. So this type of thing does happen at the CFL level, and I'm curious to see if he's able to make the move. It might not end up being a fit, but who knows? Could be a late-round gem for a team looking to develop a big athlete at that position.
Yeah, Ebello has really intriguing length. The defensive line tape, I'll be honest, not that great at this stage. Like his brother, Sylvester, who I believe is in next year's draft class, is a much better defensive lineman, much better athlete. But the size with Franklin is impressive, and I'll be intrigued to see that. Certainly, there have been years where I've gone to the CFL Combine, and I look at the list of offensive linemen, and about half of them fall into the category of these aren't good players, they're just big. There are very few guys like that this year, but it still helps when you have that massive size. Another name that I'll throw out there who has a little bit of experience on the defensive line and I think has a chance to help himself depending on how much he participates at the combine, Jez Janvier out of Southern Miss. This is a guy who started games at guard for Eastern Michigan, also started games at defensive tackle for Eastern Michigan, but transferred to Southern Miss last year and really didn't play much at all. There's some length and some athleticism there, though, and I wonder if he's able to elevate himself a little bit against more U Sports competition and the guys he sees at the CFL Combine, maybe similar to somebody who didn't play a ton in college like a Christy Nkanu did a few years ago. And then I'll give a shout out as well to somebody who I think teams are still getting a feel for. He wasn't originally a national combine invite. He was an invitational guy, but with some of the changes and opt-outs, he got pulled up. I saw him down at CGS, and he really opened my eyes. That's Frank Vergenhill from McMaster. Only 2 years of college football under his belt with the Marauders, was an OUA bronze medalist in the shot put, rugby player growing up, played a bunch of different sports, came to football while he was at the University of Toronto as a track athlete, and then went to junior football and eventually landed at Mac, has started 17 games, which is all the games he's played in his entire life, and is a very strong interior guy, can play center or guard for you. Certainly not a high pick, but somebody I'm intrigued to see more of. He tests way better than you expect for somebody of his build.
For the record, Ibello was listed as an O-lineman in 21 and 22, has been a D-lineman the last 3 years. So you are correct, JC. He played 5 games in 22. I don't know if those were starts or if he just dressed, but I was unaware that he started out as an O-lineman. So thank you for that note. Let's go to the defensive line now. And I think the defensive line group is strong. I think you're a little colder on it than I am, JC. It's not as good as the O-line group, but to me, there are lots of intriguing players here. And one of the things I like about this class is how good the edges are. And what I mean by that is, you know, defensive tackles, if you go back 20, 30 years, it was almost taken for granted. Like, oh, every CFL team starts a Canadian nose tackle because there's lots of them and you can just kind of plug them in there. Over the last 10 years, especially, that has completely changed. Very few CFL teams these days start a full-time Canadian defensive tackle. And part of the reason for that is defensive tackles generally just being that size, 280, 290, 300 pounds, don't have as much special teams value. CFL teams want to use their Canadians on special teams. Therefore, the 235-pound, 245-pound edge rushers, right? The defensive linemen. There are guys who get picked every year by teams going, okay, this guy's never going to rush the passer for us, but he could be a 5-year contributor on special teams, and that works great for us, especially with him, you know, filling a depth role, getting us out of a game at defensive end in case of injury. So I think that some of these guys are going to make livings on special teams. I do think, though, there are some potential starters here on the edge, but I'll give you first bite at the apple, JC. What are your thoughts on the defensive line group?
Well, I'm divided as to how to classify it, whether it's a strong group, an average group, a weak group. I think you can argue it in a bunch of different ways. The four top guys are not going to be at the combine. Akeem Mesidor could be a first-round NFL draft pick. You can take him off your CFL board almost entirely. Wesley Bailey, Renee Conga, those are two really good players out of Louisville, but they probably get NFL opportunities to start. And then Noir Gutkuth out of Wake Forest is a really good edge rusher. I'm not sure he's going to get an NFL opportunity, so he might be the guy you pencil in as a plug-and-play pass rusher in the CFL. As for the rest of the group, there are flaws. There's a lot of solid players, a lot of guys with some inside-outside versatility, bigger defensive ends who don't necessarily bend the edge particularly well, but are solid and rugged against the run and have, you know, spent some time at three tech. Those are always valuable, but not a lot of people that make you go goo goo gaga over the tape and absolutely fall in love. I'm trying to think back, Hodge, a number of years ago, who was the late add to the draft class defensive end from South Dakota?
Oh, Micah Rohn.
Micah Rohn. There's a lot of Micah Rohns in this class, in my opinion, which isn't a bad thing by any stretch, but guys who have that inside-outside versatility, maybe not even as high caliber as Micah Rohns, but guys who have some level of production. I'm thinking of the Carter Hoopers of the world, also out of South Dakota, a guy who, you know, has the size that he could play inside, has been really solid off the edge. I'm thinking of guys like Nathan Karabatsakis from Robert Morris, who 6'4", 260, has played primarily inside as defensive tackle, but of course can rush the edge, maybe not as technical with his hands as you would hope for, but somebody who had shown some juice at times. Amari Nogas will be one guy that I am watching. Was exceptional at Idaho, pretty good at Coastal Carolina last year as well. But at that same pro day where Malik Mega ripped it up, tested, how should I put this delicately? Not well at all. But the tape is really solid. And so you want to see a guy like that perform well. You wonder if he can overcome it. I liken him a little bit, although I think he's got better length overall, but to Nate Marty from last year, who was one of my favorite players to watch on tape. Absolutely exceptional in terms of his hand usage, his pursuit, his hustle, everything he did, but was just a bad athlete, unfortunately, and went late to the Hamilton Tiger Cats, didn't stick with them. I wonder what mold Amari Nogas is going to be. Teams clearly like him. He's in the top 20 of the Scouting Bureau rankings, but those testing numbers are hard to overlook. There's going to be some good special teamers, though, as you noted. Charlie Parks from Saskatchewan, I think, has a long future after being the Canada West most outstanding lineman last year on special teams, and even guys getting called up from the Invitational like Stephen Capay. Hasn't been very good at defensive end, but you look at his athletic measurables and you wonder what he can do for you on teams. Tristan Marois, another one out of Colorado, 6'6", 240, essentially only played special teams for the Buffaloes under Coach Prime. Had some success at Robert Morris as a pass rusher. What can he offer at the CFL Combine to prove whether he can play defense or not? But certainly somebody with his length and size who can be a mismatch covering kicks.
You know, JC, I'm surprised you didn't remember Mike Arone's name, considering they wrote a song about him.
They wrote a song about Mike Arone?
Yeah, it's like, Mike Arone. You know, you don't remember? Yeah, that's fair enough. Personally, I'm in agreement. We're not going to see the best defensive lineman at the Combine. That said, I am looking for kind of this, for lack of a better term, blob of, like, if you want to call them Mike Aronas, I think that's fine. But guys who are, it's like, okay, who are just the teamers? Who are guys who are teamers with special or with pass rush upside? Personally, I think of the top four, like Akeem Mesidor is never playing in the CFL. Let's call a spade a spade. He's going to be a first-round NFL draft pick. Rene Konga, I think, is a riser. He's someone who, you know, months ago was being talked about as a priority undrafted free agent in the NFL. A lot of folks now think he's going to be a late-round pick. Wesley Bailey is going to be a priority free agent, I believe, both of them out of Louisville, and both originally from Ottawa. I don't know if it was in the water in Ottawa that year, but well done. And then the fourth one, Noyer Gatkoth out of Wake Forest, I do think is a CFL now guy, like unless he tests off the charts. So Gatkoth, again, not going to be at the Combine, but a guy who, if you're a CFL fan, you should know, because he's a guy who put up, I think it's 21 quarterback pressures just this past year with the Demon Deacons. That's per Pro Football Focus. He's bendy off the edge. He's got some length. He's got a nice frame. And I think is someone who actually projects as a better CFL player than four down player. He's a little undersized off the edge down south. I think in Canada, he's the perfect frame. So I'm curious to see where he ends up, because he's probably going to be the first defensive lineman off the board.
I'll give a shout out to my favorite defensive lineman in this class, because you and I got into it about this guy a little bit yesterday as we were prepping for the pod. But my favorite player to watch of the group is Nagale Frangione from Georgetown, originally a transfer from UBC. Now, this guy does not have the physical measurables that you necessarily want from a defensive tackle. Listed at 6 foot, I think he's going to measure in under that, 280 pounds, although he may have trimmed down a little bit because he was briefly attempting to get another year of eligibility and compete as a fullback south of the border, but exceptional technical player at the FCS level, disruptive, a little spark plug who uses his hands extremely well despite a lack of length. There's just not a ton of comps for defensive tackles who are that size, particularly among Canadians. Kyle Sampson is the guy, a former teammate of his that, you know, I thought of when I watched him. But Sampson, of course, hasn't panned out since he was drafted relatively highly a number of years ago. I think you can look at somebody like a Jonah Tavai as an American as perhaps a comp, as somebody who's got some size but isn't particularly big inside, but can contribute as both a pass rusher and a run defender. But I'm going to be intrigued to see what Frangione brings to the table, because in terms of what I've seen on film from these guys, he is the best of the group in terms of how he plays football. The question will be, is that enough to overcome the dearth of measurables he has compared to all these other defensive tackle and defensive end prospects that are all 6'4", with longer arms than he has?
For me, the rough comp for Frangione would be Ettore Latanzio. And not just because they both have extraordinarily Italian names, but because Latanzio, a little bit lighter, and a U Sports guy, not an NCAA guy, but he was a way undersized defensive tackle, got picked by, I think it was 2016, by the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, who immediately were like, we're going to put him at fullback because that's where he should be playing. It didn't work out. He signs with his hometown Red Blacks. They go, yeah, he's just an undersized defensive tackle and that's okay. And he became like a second down demon, where in obvious passing situations, he would go out, embarrass the guard, and pick up a sack. So I'm not saying there's no future for Frangione. I'm just saying there's not a huge appetite of the CFL for undersized defensive tackles. But again, we'll have to wait and see. Ettore Latanzio had a great CFL career. Maybe Frangione is the next guy. Let's go to a position I think we both like, JC. This is the linebacker group, one of the stronger positions in this year's draft. Daryl Jabom out of Rutgers is not going to be at the combine. He's the consensus number one linebacker. He tested quite well at Rutgers' recent pro day, and I have him mocked as a first-round pick in the CFL draft. That's if he does not garner an NFL contract. If he does, which is possible, then he would drop down probably to round two, maybe as low as round three, but I don't think far. Who are your favorite linebackers, JC, outside of Jabom? Because the rest of these guys are going to be at combine.
I will say, I came in to this linebacker class, I wouldn't say with low expectations, but not a ton of expectations. And as I went through them one by one, I became more and more impressed. I think there's a lot of guys who can be players in this group. I think there are guys who didn't even make it to the National Combine that are going to be able to make a CFL roster as a special teamer. This is a really, really deep class. Now, in terms of who can be that linebacker too, I think there are four guys right now who are in some form of contention for me. There's Darius McKenzie, who is the NCAA guy out of South Alabama. It doesn't blow you away as an FBS player, but certainly a reliable tackler, very consistent, plays with good eyes, keys and diagnoses well, everything you want to see from a linebacker. I don't know that he's necessarily a starter. He's not your Jeffrey Kanté-Arku type of prospect, but a guy who's going to be a very high caliber backup as his floor in the CFL. The problem is, I'm not sure that he's fully healthy right now heading into the combine, so we'll see how much, if any, he's able to participate. And then there are a couple of U Sports guys. Justin Pace out of Queens, first team All-Canadian linebacker 2 years ago, an absolute shark out there. He hits like a two-ton truck and like he's trying to hurt you. And sometimes, given some suspensions on his record in U Sports, he may actually be trying to do that. Like, he is a menace out there, but very good in coverage as well, drops effectively, reads the QB's eyes. You like everything you see from Justin Pace. And then a guy I got to see at CGS, Osasere Odumwenji from Calgary, who blew me away. Amazing instincts, has a great feel for the position, sorts through the traffic well, triggers extremely quickly. He has the range to make plays across the field. I think he's a guy who can, with another strong performance at the combine, really elevate himself. And then the last guy, sort of a wild card, is Eric Rasko out of Angelo State, a Division II guy who was a three-time All-Conference selection, played in the Indoor Football League last year before discovering that he could become a national because of his mother's status as a Canadian citizen, and is now trying to, a year removed from college, make his way into the CFL. He's a little bit smaller than the other guys I mentioned, more of a Will than a Mike linebacker listed at 215. I'm not sure he's going to quite get up to that, but impressive, impressive tape at the Division II level. A bouncy player, very nimble. I'm over the moon excited to watch these linebackers in action. I think they're all going to be really good CFL players for a long time.
Yeah, to me, Darius McKenzie, and he's been dealing with an ankle, so it's unclear if he's going to test. But I think he's a guy who has the potential to be a starter at Mike. I think Justin Pace can certainly be a starter at Mike. Rasko, you mentioned his age. He's somebody who, I think for some teams, his pro experience might be a little bit of a turnoff. Like, he's a little bit older. But for some teams, it might be considered a plus. It's like, hey, we're bringing in somebody who's more of a finished product, somebody who's ready to contribute right away. We don't have to teach this guy how to be a pro. We don't have to teach this guy everything like you might have to for a 22-year-old kid who's coming in wide-eyed and bushy-tailed and maybe a little bit intimidated. No, he didn't play at a high-level pro situation, but he still got pro reps, and that still counts for something. Jackson Brashear, I think, is worth mentioning, if for no other reason than he's the son of Donald Brashear, very longtime NHL player. And I know he's a big name NHL player, JC, because I know who he is. I can name like maybe 50 hockey players. And the last 20, I can only name because the Olympics just happened. I'm not a hockey guy, but I remember Donald Brashear. So Jackson Brashear out of Ottawa, you wrote a great article about him if people want to check it out. But to me, this is a good group, right? And we're in a bit of a renaissance period, I think, right now for CFL linebackers. There was a period in league history not that long ago where like there was maybe one Canadian starter. Like I feel like Shea Emery was like a ratio breaking linebacker and everybody else was all American. Well, you got Ben Hladek, who started a ton of games in BC. You've got Joel DeBlanco, former first overall pick, who's won that job in Edmonton. You've got Devin Varasek in the NFL now, but started a ton of games at Mike for the Tiger Cats in 2025 as a rookie. Obviously Cameron Judge is a longtime starter currently with the Toronto Argonauts. You've got AJ Allen, who's won a starting job now, one of the highest paid defensive players in the league for the Ottawa Redblacks. And then in Montreal, you've got Jeffrey Canton-Arcou, who's won that starting job. So with all of these Canadian starters at linebacker, you need guys behind them, right, who are quality, who can step up and start in their place potentially, or develop into starters themselves. And I think they're, especially if you count Jabom, who's, again, potentially going to start his career in the NFL, I think there are multiple starting linebackers in this group. And if not, the plus of linebackers is, as always, it comes back to special teams, right? Linebackers are tailor-made from an athleticism standpoint, a physicality standpoint, a size standpoint, to cover on teams, to block on teams, those types of things. So you can never go wrong drafting a linebacker in the Canadian Football League draft. You really can't. Let's finish up our positional preview, JC, with the defensive backs. And this is a bit of a weird year. Typically, CFL teams come into the draft saying, okay, we want a physical safety, right? We want somebody who can play on the back end because a lot of teams start Canadian safeties. And, you know, coverage ability maybe isn't the most important thing. We want some range. Maybe we want some physicality, some special teams upside. This year's draft class has a couple of guys like that, but a lot of these guys are corners and a lot of them can really play. So how do you see this class, JC? Because this maybe isn't the standard defensive back class in the CFL draft.
Yeah, there's a lot of elite athletes in this class, in my opinion. Two names who won't be at the combine, of course, Malcolm Bell, the long corner from Michigan State. As we are recording this podcast here on Thursday, Michigan State is about to have their pro day, so we don't have results for him, but somebody, depending on how he runs, who could get NFL interest if he is on the quicker end. And then Jet Elad, the longtime veteran safety was bounced around the NCAA, somebody CFL teams are going to look at very highly, a potential first round pick, somebody who can play safety, somebody who can potentially play Sam linebacker based on some of his tape. So those are two really intriguing blue chip guys in my mind. And then there are a number of guys who, depending on how they test or whether they test, are going to just drop jaws. Devin Cromwell will also be participating in that Michigan State Pro Day. We'll see how he does, whether that makes him opt out of CFL Combine testing. But a guy who, prior to transferring from Guelph to Texas Tech originally and then Michigan State, you know, posted some silly numbers in team testing. He's going to jump in the high 30s, if not 40s in the vertical, a super athletic guy. Same thing with Patrick Cumberbatch, who is the identical twin brother of Eric Cumberbatch, who blew up the combine last year out of Ottawa and eventually got drafted by the Ottawa Redblacks, played some games for them last year. I think he might be even slightly more athletic than his brother. He is going to test insane. There's also Benjamin Sangmua out of UBC, who I just saw perform at UBC's Pro Day, and I clocked with my very own hands a 4.44, which, for the record, don't just trust me. That was the same time that the Seattle Seahawks scout got on the run. I double-checked, but he is legit fast, a guy who's only played football for 5 years. He's very raw. There's some flaws to his game still. He's probably been out of position as a Sam linebacker. In my opinion, needs to move further away from the action. But an absolute freak of an athlete. And I will even throw a guy like Louis-Philippe Gauthier in that equation as well, who has been a exceptional cornerback for the Montreal Canadiens. I'm not sure he's going to be, there's going to be some questions about his physicality at times or how consistently he wants to get in after as a tackler. That's a pretty common refrain when you're talking about U-Sports corners, or are they physical enough to do the other things that we're going to ask of them. But a shutdown guy and a big game performer. 8 career interceptions, Hodge. Do you want to know how many of those 8 career interceptions came in playoff games for Gauthier?
How many?
7. 7 wow. Of his 8 career interceptions have come in playoff games, including having one in every single game in Montreal's run to the Vanier Cup this past year. When the moment is biggest, that's when Gauthier shines the most, and he's posted some explosive jumps in the past. I think he is a quick guy. I'm excited to see how he tests at the combine.
My concern about Sangmua is a lack of physicality. He's a guy who I think is going to blow up the testing at the combine. I believe the word one scout used to me is he's a little bit of an observer, or he's like a little bit of a watcher or like a passenger on some plays. He needs to be a little bit more physical. That being said, I like this group a lot. I think Malcolm Bell, depending on how well he runs at Michigan State, I had one source say he's going to run in the high 4.4s. If you do that at 6'2" and 200 pounds starting for a high level collegiate program in the Big Ten, I don't see how you don't get an NFL shot. So we'll wait and see about Malcolm Bell's testing, but he's a guy who I think will be in the NFL to start his career. If he runs well, if he doesn't, I do think that the CFL is an option, maybe not in 2026, but certainly by 2027. Trey Tomlinson out of Louisiana pains me to say because he's a Winnipeg native, just a little undersized. I think that's going to be a knock because
like a good player,
but he's a very
he's
good
so
player.
So good.
And look, we talked a little bit about some of the trends that we've seen from CFL teams, the way that they put their starters out on the field. Well, more teams than ever are playing Canadian corners, or at least certainly in the last 30 years, more teams are playing Canadian corners. Adrian Green started a ton of games for the Calgary Stampeders in 2025. Godfrey Onyeka started games for them. Delonte Robinson started a game for them. They used a first-round pick on Ben LeBros in 2024. He started games for them. And then, obviously, Tavon Campbell did great things for the Saskatchewan Roughriders in 2025, All-CFL selection at corner. And who am I missing, JC? There's at least one other starting corner in this league. Oh, Tyrell Ford, who is All-CFL with the Edmonton Elks in 2020. Or, pardon me. Also about the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in 2024 and then had a good season with the Edmonton Elks in 2025. So it's possible that Tomlinson, that raises his stock. I can say 10 years ago when I started covering this event, short cornerbacks had no value to CFL teams. You had to be an unbelievably good corner if you were undersized to get a sniff. These days, it's probably changed for the better. I don't think Tomlinson can test his way into the top 15 picks. But if he tests well, I do think he could be a guy. So DB class is strong. And as more Canadians have started, we talked about corner, we talked about linebacker, some other positions. Safety has kind of become a bit of an American position. Derek Sluka was a breakout there for the Argonauts in 25. The Bombers have started an American safety kind of forever at this point. You know, it's just become more of a thing. I think some of these guys could potentially change that back to teams going, wow, like there's so much depth from these Canadians at safety. Even if we're playing a corner, why not play a safety as well? We've just got these high-level players who are coming up and showing range and showing physicality, all the things that you want to see from those safeties. So thank you very much for checking out our positional preview. I'm going to give you a shot. Just pause. We thank you for joining us for our positional preview of the 2026 CFL Combine. JC and I are going to have boots on the ground in Edmonton talking to all kinds of players, all kinds of teams. Before we sign off, JC, your final thoughts as we go into this evaluation event.
Well, I had more things to say about the DBs, Hodge. You're just trying to usher me off stage left here.
Well, we have like the DBs. We're going to, after the combine's done, have a whole other show about who stands out. So anybody who didn't make the cut this time, we can talk about them then.
Well, I mean, just Ethan Stewart, I think, is a name that we've got to mention as well. Somebody who's really impressed me at CGS and also, going through the process with the film. 220 pounds as a guy who played halfback. And frankly, I think he moves well enough. He doesn't have to play linebacker if you don't want him to. I think he can stick as a safety in the CFL. Super fluid as a mover. Great reaction times. I like him a lot. So that's a name I want to shout out in there. I also do want to defend Sangmua a little bit from your slight in terms of his physicality and his activity. There is not a single player at this national combine who has produced more tackles or more pass breakups than Sangmua in their college career. He has been around the ball. So my question, is it a lack of physicality? Because you do see it when you watch him. Or is it the fact that this guy is brand new to football? He hasn't stayed in a single position more than 2 years, and he's still trying to figure things out, and he doesn't know what he's seeing yet. I think that will be the question that CFL scouts will have to answer, is can we teach him to be more physical? Because I think there has been enough production that there is a willingness for him to be around the ball. He finds it, but is he necessarily a finisher or an eager tackler? Those are valid questions, but does it stem from unwillingness? Or does it stem from eyes that just aren't locked in yet? Because he did not start playing football until after grade 12.
And that's a fair point. He's not a long tenure football player. And I have a stronger opinion on him than some other guys just because I've had the chance to see him in person, right? Which is not the case for most of these players. I see a lot of the Canada West guys when they come through the University of Manitoba, where I live nearby. But anyway, for JC Abbott, I'm John Hodge. I'm excited to see how these guys perform. I'm excited to enjoy this event, meet up with old friends, make some new ones. And again, if you want to be one of those new folks, if you listen to the pod, you watch the pod, you enjoy it, feel free to stop by a public.
We charge $20 for pictures.
And by that, JC means he'll give you $20 if you ask him for a photo. That's the transaction. That's the way it works. We'd love to say hi. And make it work. So we'll see you then. Have fun. Good luck to all the prospects as we go into this event.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.